Hi guys, this is Comics Therapy. No reviews, just analysis. If you're new to the show, welcome. I'm Andrea Shockling. My co-host is Aaron Myers, and we really just like to talk about comics. We also love talking to comics creators, although this week we don't have an interview because of the holiday weekend. But in the past, we've chatted with everyone from Kelly Sue DeConnick to Phil Hester to Chris Sabella. So if you haven't heard them before, I suggest checking out Becky Cloonan back in episode 16, or Brian Wood in episode 26, or Klaus Janson in episode 31. But honestly, I just wanted to take a second this week to say thank you. We joke a lot on and off the show with each other and about the industry, but the truth is, Aaron and I are so grateful to have this tiny little corner of the comics community to talk to. We truly, sincerely could not do this without you guys. And even more importantly, we wouldn't want to. So thanks. Okay, enough with the feelings. Let's get to the comics.
This is Comics Therapy, episode 44, No Reviews, Just Analysis. Up this week, three comics from May 28th, 2014. Miss Marvel number 4, Pariah number 4, and Deadly Class number 5. As always, we have your nerd confessions, and just as a reminder, we never do reviews, but we do talk a lot, so there may be spoilers ahead.
This is Chris Callahan, a.k.a. at RGB underscore alpha. So, what comic books should be taught in schools? I'm actually going to steal this idea from my buddy. He's a teacher in the LA area and currently uses Superman Red Sun in all his history classes. Kind of a genius way to get kids interested. Not surprisingly, it's his most popular lesson plan of the year. So, that's my pick. Cheers, guys.
Welcome to Comics Therapy. You know the deal. Neither Aaron nor I are licensed therapists, so don't take anything we say seriously. This episode, in honor of the holiday weekend marking the unofficial start to summer, we're talking about school. Okay, not really, because school sucks. And you know why? It's not because of the work. It's because of the kids. If hell is other people, then high school is the ninth circle. So today we're looking at teen superheroes and what they do outside of school. And schools for young assassins, and kids sent to space because they're too smart for school. You know how adolescents and school cliques are portrayed in stories written by adults, in many cases for adults, but featuring kids? It's totally fine. Because being a teenager really does suck, for a lot of reasons. And that's no different in comics.
Hi, Comics Therapy. It's Andrea's best Twitter friend, Ashley, calling at Ashley B. Robinson on the Twitters. And also co-host of Geek History Lesson podcast. I saw that you guys posted a question about what we think the best comic book that should be taught in school is. That's me butchering your excellent phrasing choices. And I'm going to go with Bone. I think that it's an excellent hero's journey that follows a very classic archetype. And if I were designing curriculum, which God knows is something I should never be allowed to do, I would try to teach it in the same time that I would teach people about something like Lord of the Rings. So maybe grade 6 or grade 7, 12, 13-year-olds. I would also say that I would want to teach Grant Morrison's All-Star Superman in a mythology class, but would probably save that for an older high school class, so maybe 10th grade for a bunch of 15-year-olds. I think both of those are incredibly valid because they follow classic mythological archetypes. It's really early for me right now. And that they could be used to bring the medium home in a more accessible way than maybe something like the Iliad, which is fantastic, but, you know, dense as all get out. So those are my answers. I love the show. I love you. Be safe and make good choices.
In between comic segments, your very own nerd confessions, celebrating what we love, for the most part, about comics. This week, we asked your thoughts on what comics and graphic novels should be taught in schools and why. You can call, Skype, or email your confessions to us. The details are on the website, comicstherapy.com. Remember, catharsis is cool. You want to be one of the cool kids, don't you?
Are you one of the cool kids, Aaron?
Now, yeah.
Were you when you were in high school?
Not in high school, in college, though.
Really?
Yeah, they called me the farmer.
Were they laughing at you or with you?
No, you know why they call me the farmer.
Because you were from a super rural area.
No, because I was plowing all that...
All that what?
Pussy.
I walked right into that. Uh-huh.
Yep. Plowing those fields.
Yes. Okay. In between shows, you can find me on Twitter at Andrea Schock and Aaron at Aaron Myers. The show account at Comics Therapy. So let's take our own quiz, Aaron. What comics do you want to see taught in schools?
I think you know what my answer is going to be.
I don't actually listen to you when you talk, so I have no idea.
Yeah, but this is a book you recently read as well.
I don't know.
I Kill Giants.
Oh my God, you think that should be taught in schools?
Yeah, I think at a high school level.
Oh, fuck. I would hate to cry.
It's heavy emotionally, but sure. You know, so are a lot of like the suggestions people gave us this week.
That's true. It's a beautiful book. It absolutely is. And you're right. There's a ton of interesting like symbolism and the way that the story is presented from Barbara's point of view and like what is real and what isn't and the way that she handles difficult transition times in her life. Okay. I got it. Sure.
Thank you. So what would you...
I think I have some pretty obvious like historical answers like... Mouse, obviously, I think.
Mm-hmm. It already is, though.
It already is, certainly. I think building stories, and I know that's brand new, but like in terms of craft, I think it's hard for me not to think of like an overview course that would look at like an entire unit.
Like sometimes they have those like Nexus classes that are both like history and English together or something.
Yeah, but like something that looks at the medium as a whole. Including like the Comics Code and looking at the influence of politics on presentation of story, but then a more specific class in high school that talked about the way that stories don't necessarily have to be presented in a linear fashion. Have you read all of Building Stories?
No.
Okay, so it's really interesting because so many books, not so many, but like other books have claimed to have multiple access points that mm-hmm. like you can pick it up at any point and blah, blah, blah. And that's often difficult for me. But in the case of Building Stories, I actually firmly believe that. And a lot of it has to do with the form that it's presented in. And it's not laid out for you. So you have like step one and then you go to step two. So you can kind of more organically discover the subject matter. And I think that having spent like a lifetime in literature classes that are so linear, having a piece kind of throw a lot of that structure of storytelling out the window and yet be incredibly emotional and successful in presenting a story could be like a really interesting class.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I don't know of many schools that do classes in depth like that anymore, unfortunately, except at the college level.
Right. And I think that it's also really easy to think about all of this at a more sophisticated level because, you know, we're adults and we overanalyze and bullshit our way through this every week. So trying to pull back the layers and think about how I would approach it at like a more elementary or even secondary level is a little bit of a challenge. I wanted to mention, I wrote this down because I don't know if you are familiar with it, but Scholastic has a whole series that teaches kids how to read comics. I feel like we've talked about it before, but I'm not positive, but they're called Toon books. And they're...
Wait, is that different than the How Toons?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, totally different. They're leveled. We did talk about this, but I'm going to go ahead and describe it anyway, because I think it's a really important point about reading comics that is rarely acknowledged, and that's the fact that you have to be taught how to read a comic. And so in the first leveled Toon books, It's one or two panels per page. It might be like a single character, a single like speech bubble at a time, so that you can introduce the medium. And I know that you read books, you read comics with Luke a lot, but as he starts to read independently more and more, there is, you have to be careful that you don't like skip a step in like understanding visually how to approach like cartoon art as a storytelling form. And I think it's kind of awesome that Scholastic, because they published the Bone books, and like Avi's allowed to read the Bone books and take quizzes on them at school, which is kick-ass. Like they are leveled and therefore have like a whole series of comprehension questions that he can take for his like weekly reading quizzes. So the fact that Scholastic is like stepping back and saying this is a valid like a literary form, and here let's publish a series of books. Jeff Smith has written a couple of the early ones that can help kids understand actually how to read this in a different way from their other reading, I think is just fucking awesome.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, I never think of having to teach kids how to read comics.
Of course not.
Like, I certainly didn't have to, like, learn how to read comics.
But did you start reading them as you were learning to read?
Maybe. I mean, there are definitely comic. It's different. Like, I understand what you're saying. Mm-hmm. It's just not something I would have thought of, because I don't think of having to learn to read comics. I think of comics teaching you to read, in a way.
And but I
definitely see the point of it.
Like, there are countless stories of... I'm not prescribing these Toon books as something that, like, everybody needs to have so that you can understand how to read a comic. I'm not trying to, like, reduce it.
No, like I know what you mean.
But it certainly can go a long way towards helping new readers become independent readers.
And probably access the medium sooner.
But again, this is like much more about the medium, not about the content. And I think that when we asked the question, we were looking more about content. Like, what stories have been successfully told, like I Kill Giants or like Mouse in Persepolis, books that are like really important because of the story that they're telling, that so that a middle school or high school student could read that in school and analyze it the same way that you would in a regular high school English class.
A lot that come to mind for me are gonna be the higher level, like high school type stuff.
I agree, because it's
and now we have like March, you know, as a recent book. Good history class story.
And that one is definitely leveled at a more I think a more approachable, like, younger level. Avi read March by himself.
But that's an easy one to integrate into, you know, junior high or high school history class.
Yep.
There's a lot. And I think that would go along, those go a long way for a lot of kids to enjoy, you know, some actually assigned work.
Right.
That wouldn't, you know, that don't necessarily like to read or something.
Interestingly, I also think that some of the ones that we mentioned, and I've heard this about Persepolis especially, can be kind of a gateway drug towards other comics for kids who might like the content but have not had much experience with the medium. If they have, especially some of the like autobio comics and for female readers, that might not be about the like historical importance of the event, but might instead be, here is an approachable story told from a female perspective in a like pleasant new form that you have not been exposed to before. And then suddenly you have a whole bunch of new comics readers also.
Yeah. It's a matter of finding the audience. Like, you could have a kid who's really into music, but has never been, you know, encouraged to read or anything like that. You hand him Hip Hop Family Tree or something.
Or Fifth Beatle.
Or Fifth Beatle, sure. But, you know, the kids like the hip hop these days.
Have you read that yet?
No. Okay. Well, I read the Free Comic Book Day edition.
Do you read it online?
Through the book. I haven't. I know it's all online, but, you know, I don't like computers.
Ah, of course.
So anyway, I'll get the book one of these days. But something like that, you know, if you find the right person for a book like that, that could be that first step. Mm-hmm. It's a matter of having somebody who knows how to distribute the information to the people that will enjoy it the most.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of things that are enjoyable because they're fucking awesome, what'd you do this weekend?
Are weekends enjoyable because they're awesome?
What did you do this weekend that is notable because it got you out of the house to embrace a pop culture moment kind of in the same timeline as the rest of us?
Yeah, I saw a movie.
You did? Was it enjoyable?
It was enjoyable.
And did it take place over the weekend?
I believe so.
Okay, so
time is a flat circle, so I'm not really sure, but I think that's correct.
Something, something, time in a bottle.
Okay.
I mean, you gotta keep with the relevant observations. In this case, use the time song from the movie that you saw, not another True Detective reference.
Well, can't have too many.
Fair point. How was Days of Future Past?
I give it an 8 out of 10.
Okay. Why?
I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Why? Well, I'm not going to ask you why just an 8, because I applaud your restraint. But what did you enjoy and what did you not enjoy?
I don't want to do reviews.
It's not a review, dude. Tell me what you liked.
I liked that there were Sentinels and X-Men and good acting and cool special effects in a story that did not anchor me.
And tell me what you didn't like.
There wasn't much I didn't like. There were a couple of little nitpicks, you know, if you're forcing somebody to, like, nerd out about things. But
it kind of was. I mean, isn't that, that's what you bring to the table.
I mean, I kind of told you, like, my only thing that, you know, Kitty Pryde doesn't have the ability to send people's brains back in time.
Sure.
That didn't need to be her. You could have had her as an, you know, homage. She still could have been part of that team, especially the future team fighting the Sentinels.
Yeah, but didn't it give her a more relevant role to have that kind of central power? I understand.
But it has nothing to do with her power set.
Oh, so she was like phasing consciousness or something.
I guess.
Yeah, whatever.
Sort of. You might as well just have another X-Men there that can do that.
I guess.
And it would have been, actually wouldn't have made her have a more central role if she was helping the, like, you know, the frontline team keep Wolverine safe.
I guess.
Because her power is so powerful. Like, she, you know, she could have really helped everyone else defeat those Sentinels a lot easier.
They were not going to defeat those Sentinels. That was the whole point.
But, I mean, no, you know, Kitty is one of the most powerful X-Men because of that phasing ability.
Sure.
And, or it would have been really neat to see, like, how they would come up with how does the Sentinel adapt to her power set.
Right.
You know.
Bishop was cool.
Bishop was really cool for a character who's not, I don't dislike him, but I never thought he was that cool in the comics.
Oh, but I have, like, a sentimental attachment to him.
I think because you were so into X-Men during his, like, you know, his big time.
Right. Sure.
There have been good Bishop stuff. I don't hate him. He's just not one of my top X-Men. But he was good. He was used well in the movie.
Correct.
And that was, you know, that was a good casting choice. Like, I believe that guy was Bishop.
How about Quicksilver?
Quicksilver is great. Like, I thought that was done really well. And I liked the little, you know, the little bit of allusions and nods that, you know, they're Magneto's children.
Yeah, that will be an interesting, I don't know.
It might not even be brought up again.
Exactly.
It's just more for the comics fans, sure, to acknowledge, we know.
Much more of an Easter egg than anything sort of significant, and Lord knows they've discounted other points that they've made in the past if they decided to, like, go in a slightly different direction. I mean, the whole movie was basically that, so.
The whole movie was a reset.
Yeah, that's cool.
Good. I like that a lot because I thought the X-Men universe had been kind of
fucked.
Yeah, pretty much.
I felt more like I was watching a comic book movie than I did in, like, the Avengers, for example. And let me explain what that means. There were certain poses that were very much, like, right out of a comic. That moment where Mystique is, you know, standing there with her leg up as she's strangling the guy, and, like,
yeah,
there's a long pause on that position mm-hmm. was so ridiculous and so gratuitous in a comic book way that I really appreciated it. I thought that was an excellent kind of nod to the source material.
Without being ridiculous or campy.
Exactly. Exactly. It was still tasteful and it was still like sort of hilarious, but there were a number of visuals like that that I felt made the feel very like comic booky is the worst adjective on the planet, but it is the only one that I can use mm-hmm. because it's so rarely accomplished. Like, yes. It's attempted, but it is, like, the number one source of failure for, like, bad comic book movies. Yeah. And yet, this one, comic booky.
But the X-Men are the perfect characters to accomplish that.
Right.
Like, it's hard to do with, like, a Batman or, you know, even some of the Avengers in some ways. Because it just, when you translate it to a film, that kind of stuff doesn't always work.
Well, and it was never campy. You can't do it for the entire film or it just gets ridiculous. It turns into something like Kick-Ass.
Right.
So,
that was fun.
Good weekend. Hooray.
Mm-hmm.
We saw movies. We were social.
Yes. I've still not seen Godzilla. I probably will not make it to see it in the theater. But
yeah, I don't think
you have to make your choices, I guess.
Yes. I think we both made the right choice.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm probably going to go see it again.
Wow. Okay. Why wouldn't you go see a new movie?
Well, I don't know. Because I really enjoyed it and because Danny wants to see it. So I think we might try to go see it.
Okay, well, you have a reason. It's not just, I'm just going to go see it again and not see other movies that are good that I should see.
So
let's talk about comic books.
Let's talk about comics. Okay.
Hi, guys. Jason Sachs here at Jason Sachs on the Twitter. This is a way to answer it. It's such a general question, and there's so much great comic stuff out there. First of all, for any class that's going to teach a survey of comics history, the one and only series of books to buy, of course, are the American Comic Book Chronicles, published by Tomorrow's Press, the 1970s volume, which is co-edited and co-written by me, is virtually done and will be available at San Diego. And we have volumes about most of the other decades of comics history available on all your favorite marketplaces. Cannot recommend them enough. They're outstanding. In terms of graphic novels or other comic-related material, I'd like to focus on historical or literary material. I have four choices for you. The first of all is one that I've really enjoyed very much, Willie and Joe Back Home. It is by Bill Maudlin, who is kind of the poet laureate of World War II and post-World War II cartooning. This amazing book is about America right after World War II, when the country was going through a surprising number of major problems. And it really puts you back in that world. We tend to romanticize that generation as the greatest generation. But the fact is, they went through a lot of hell. And even once they returned to America after going through hell in Europe and in the islands of Asia, they still have a lot of hell that they went through. And their story is very interesting. Secondly, Joe Sacco, The Great War. Sacco, of course, is one of our great historical cartoonists and is, I'm not sure if you could call it a book or a graphic novel or what, but it's an amazing creation. Third, particular favorite of Daniel Elkin and mine, Noah Van Sciver's The Hypo, The Melancholic Young Lincoln. It's a great look at the youth of Abraham Lincoln, what kind of helped make him the man that we remember so much through history, and presents a portrait of Lincoln that you just really don't see in the history books. He was a complex, interesting, kind of strange man, and Van Sciver is a complex, interesting, kind of strange cartoonist, as work really brings Lincoln to life in interesting ways. So then the third book that I recommend is a book called Kafka. As you might imagine, it's about the life of Franz Kafka by Robert Crumb and David Zane Merowitz, also published by Fantagraphics, who published The Hypo and the book by Bill Maudlin that I mentioned. It's a beautiful, amazing, weird book
by a beautiful, amazing, weird cartoonist about a beautiful, amazing, and weird writer. Crumb brings Kafka to life in ways that really kind of put you in his shoes, see his psychological torment, and give you a sense of why he created these works that he created. It's a perfect book for like a high school English class, although there's some kind of latent sex in there, which you might expect. I think there's a depth of characterization that really can supplement a study of Kafka's work for an AP English class. That will be a lot of fun. So I kind of chose a wide variety of stuff that I think would be interesting to teach at high school level or higher. Again, though, my highest recommendation, The American Comic Book Chronicles, published by Two Morris Press. Pre-order the 1970s book. It's going to be brilliant. Thanks, guys. Talk to you later.
Book this week is Ms. Marvel number 4, written by G. Willow Wilson, with art by Adrian Alfona. Coloring is by Ian Herring, and lettering is by Joe Caramanga. Ms. Marvel is published by Marvel Comics.
I didn't write any summaries this week. This is probably not a surprise to anybody.
Inhumanity.
Oh,
turned
sure.
Turned her into a inhuman with the ability to shapeshift.
Yeah. No, that's good. That's good. Because when that was the premise for how Carmella got her powers, I thought that was excellent. I am a big fan of things kind of tying together in a way that makes sense. And when you're talking about stuff that inherently doesn't make sense, I thought that was a good choice. High fives for everyone.
Yeah, no, it's fine to have events and to have tie-in event to those events that work. And this is the one, not that stuff was bad, but this is the one that goes like, oh, this makes sense to launch this character this way.
Right.
And it works from the get-go.
And the fact that she's a teenager, the fact that she is dealing with all of the sort of typical teenage things on top of the exploring how her like family life intersects with those.
Mm-hmm.
And now she's got powers and she doesn't know why. I think that is also, you know, such a great allegory, right? She has no idea what's going on with her body. She has no idea why she suddenly has powers. It's just one more thing that she doesn't fit in about.
But it's very Spider-Man in that way.
Yeah, it's
and
awesome.
I like those when the character makes sense to that. Like, it's the, you know, what makes Spider-Man so appealing is because Peter is inherently a good person who knows that it's that great power, great responsibility. Even though it's a played out cliche,
right.
Maybe to say now, there's a truth to that, and that's what makes him so, you know, such a beloved character.
Right.
And I think, you know, with Ms. Marvel as well, is that she is a good person who is running into different situations and finding her heroism, you know, within.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's drawn to doing good.
This book is pretty fearless for what it is.
Yeah, I think one of the aspects that I like about it is it's not a Muslim girl, you know, superhero book. It's a girl who gets superhero powers, and it's almost like you could kind of say it's kind of funny because by becoming this inhuman, it's a book about humanizing people from other cultures that I think instill within the U.S. there's still a bit of the other and the, you know, the unknown, and we have a tendency to dehumanize people like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's great to have a book like this with a character you can really connect to.
Mm-hmm.
And showing her culture, her family's faith, and it's no different than anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's different practices, but it's still an American superhero tale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that her struggle with finding her place at home, finding her place at school, finding her place with her friends, is something that is very, very much a part of what everybody's adolescence consists of, right?
Mm-hmm.
Trying to figure out who you are and how you fit into the whole rest of the world. I agree.
Especially when you're kind of a kid in the middle, you're not, she's not the kid who is in the library every night mm-hmm. studying, you know, to go to Harvard. Mm-hmm. And she's not the kid hanging out, you know, at the parties, you know, getting drunk and
she seems like a smart, good, approachable, typical teenager.
Yep.
But that is a cop-out description, usually. That's the way that we describe, like, all-American girl or all-American boy that really does the, like, tapestry of their lives a serious disservice. And in this mm-hmm. case, she is very well-rounded and very, like, fleshed out with all of those expectations that not only the world has put on her, like, the expectations from her family, the expectations from her mosque, the expectations from her school and her, like, friend groups within that school. And I find myself, like, sympathizing with her desire to, like, not make waves. And I think that's an interesting point of view for then somebody to have powers where she can physically make herself larger and be noticed in a way that she hasn't really been able to do, you know, in her life.
Mm-hmm. So at the same time, too, her power gives her the ability to hide herself whenever
right,
she wants as well.
Right. I just think it's kind of a brilliant premise meshed with the teenage years, because that desire to be noticed and the desire to hide, that, like, dichotomy is so, I don't know, like, so palpable. Even now, I can think about how I felt at that age or in that range of years, range of ages. And that is sort of like a brilliant take on that entire process of kind of growing into yourself. And mm-hmm. in her case, like, quite literally what she can do physically now and what, you know, she may or may not have been able to do before that.
It's a superhero puberty story.
Yeah. Yeah. And that could be such a disaster. And yet so far, it's mm-hmm. handled very delicately and very, like, appropriately and not in a way that I am so confident in seeing her develop that, like, I am more optimistic about this new character in the Marvel Universe than I have been in a lot of other characters recently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is, I mean, it's still early, but these last, you know, these four issues are really building a character,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
a street level character,
mm-hmm.
not flying off into space. There's no, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy tie in or
right.
anything, who is finding out how to be a member of her community,
mm-hmm.
how to balance that. It's balancing that coming of age, that individualism with still with your family, being your own person and still being true to where you come from,
mm-hmm.
you know, finding your way within the society that, especially coming from like a first or second generation family, that there's a lot of aspects and there's a lot of ways this story can go that is really exciting.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Yay.
So let's talk about other books then.
Okay, stamp of approval. Let's move on.
Hi, this is Hansel. Today I'm calling about X-Men Magneto Testament. It was a real troubling read. I mean, it was just dark, but I think it had an honesty that, it might help with getting people to have a more, you know, to comic, a more grounded and personal view of the Holocaust. It's by Greg Pak and Carmine Di Giandomenico. I hope I'm saying that right. And it's published by Marvel. And on the back of the collection, it actually has a teacher's guide written by Brian Kelly and the layout designs by Rich Ginter. And a little low, maybe like 8 through 10, something in like definitely middle school range. And it just takes Magneto with no powers through this awful, terrifying experience. And I think it is just a little bit more interesting than the standard blotter that they give out at school. I was lucky enough to have a really interesting teacher in high school that got me more interested in, you know, just a variety of things. But just to wrap your head around the Holocaust, it's awful. It's just a terrible thing. And I think X-Men Magneto, it's just the eyes of a young man. It's not a huge, powerful mutant. It's just a young kid going through it and trying to survive. and it was really touching. So I think that'd be a good thing to have in schools. Something to get the kids interested and actually have them understand, maybe have some empathy. All right, well, that's it for me. Thank you. Bye.
Our second book is Pariah, number 4, story by Aaron Warner and Philip Gallott, with art and lettering by Brett Weldell. Pariah is published by Dark Horse Comics.
Okay, so I hadn't been reading this one, unlike the other two books that we're talking about this week. So I read all 4 issues in preparation for our discussion, and it is a miniseries. I think there are 8 total planned.
Correct.
So the premise is there are...
It's the test tube babies that were created at a time in the world that have been... The world decided were no longer to be part of the human race, and right. they were sent into space.
Summarily rejected.
Yes.
Sent into orbit.
Well, they weren't sent into orbit. They were at least the world was told they were going to be sent off to colonize another planet or something. But really, they were just sent off to be jettisoned into space and forgotten about right. by the company that helped create them. Being super smart, genetically superior children, they've figured out a way to save their lives. Mm-hmm. And essentially, the story is the test tube babies versus the world.
Right. With one additional twist revealed in the last issue, the current issue, right, is that there is a...
Yeah, in the third issue. Or actually, I think it's end of the second issue, you find this out. Third issue, you find out what he's doing. And fourth issue,
sure. How. Yeah. The point is, there's one, presumably a single one of the Vitros is still on Earth. And
yes.
It plays a vital role in kind of relinquishing Earth's control over the space station where the mm-hmm. rest of them are. And then is captured by the company, you know, sucks to be him.
Yeah, sure.
But... I think the community of these like super smart teenagers who are fighting with each other in space is hilarious. The cliques that they describe that are both kind of social cliques that happen within like adolescence mm-hmm. and also then like the smart kids cliques. Like there's actually a distinction between the kids who are so smart as to be antisocial and then the kids that are sort of extra smart but don't care about helping. So they've just figured out how to like make alcohol in space, for example. I think that's awesome. I think it really is a very kind of clever and humorous way of speaking of humanizing. Just giving like the whole range of characters a little bit more depth, even though we see so many of them. I mean, it's an ensemble piece with kind of clear focus on a couple of main characters, but the ensemble has been developed in a way that I think is pretty interesting.
Yeah, in a less sinister and more kind of humorous and humanizing way.
Sure.
It's sort of a Brave New World-ish kind of thing.
Yeah, with a little bit of Lord of the Flies.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of needing a leader and the leader being the loudest voice and then that loud voice being, you know, removed because it was not serving the interest of the rest of the group it's a very adult concept we've got this almost little micro dystopian society happening on the space shuttle. And they have to figure out how to govern themselves as super smart teenagers. And those are the things that they aren't all necessarily very good at. Right?
They can that under high pressure as right. well and limited resources.
Right. So, like, we've got the survival thing figured out. We're not going to die, like, in a minute. But now we have to figure out how to function. And I think that's cool. It's an interesting take on this, like, super smart kid trope.
Yeah, and they might be, and in a different situation, they might be at each other's throats even more, but with a common enemy below them, you know, it forces them to work together and problem solve mm-hmm. and come up with, you know, ideas. So, mm-hmm. yeah, there's a lot of cool aspects to this. It's a bit much different. I don't know if I really had any expectations when I started reading this, but it's been a great read so far.
You seem to talk about it and talk about the, like, derivation of the story in a way that, like, was it in Dark Horse presents? Like, is there background
not
information?
Not that I know of, but I don't read that consistently.
Your description of it, like when you were first pitching it to me, and then what you just used to describe it, is more than what I got from just straight up reading the first four issues. Is it, like, is some of that from the solicits?
No, I don't think so. Maybe we didn't read the same book.
I don't know. Maybe, I guess some of the, like, background information about why they...
Oh, possibly that was from the solicits, because I did, you know, I pre-ordered it, and I remember reading, you know, the premise for it, so maybe part of
it doesn't, I want to make it clear that it doesn't bother me. Like, it doesn't affect my understanding of the story, and I actually, I sort of appreciate how it plunges you right into the problem that these kids have to solve. Like, from the very beginning, it's about their, like, their survival is the first thing that they have to figure out. And it's not, like, it doesn't ease you into this premise of, like, smart kids shot into space. We don't see them getting shot into space. We rarely see what it was like for them to be rounded up. We've gotten glimpses of that through memories of characters. But by the time we're introduced to them, they have to become their own little society because they've already been removed from the Earth society. So I think I just think it's interesting because it rapidly moved the story forward for me. That's all.
Yeah, I agree.
And we're almost past the point of any kind of, I don't know, like, grief that they might be experiencing from the, like, separation.
Now they're to the retaliatory stage.
Well, some of them are, certainly.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's also something that, because we're talking about kids, I guess the youngest ones that we've heard about are, like, you know, 9 and 10. And then the rest of them, or a bunch of the rest of them are teenagers, right? That sometimes they're messing with Earth in a pranking kind of way. Sometimes they're messing with Earth in a, like you said, retaliatory kind of way. And again, I just think that that is, it's a kind, there's a comical depth to their lot in life that is kind of interesting. That's all.
Well, I agree.
Anything else?
Again, nope, that's it.
Can we talk about my favorite book ever?
We can talk about our next book.
Yeah, that's true. I can't necessarily call it my favorite book ever, but damn, it's a great book.
Hello, my name is Sketchcards on Twitter. I am calling about which comics should be taught in our schools. My vote is for the graphic novel trilogy March by U.S. Representative John Lewis, published by Top Shelf. It chronicles the early 1960s struggle for civil rights from a first-hand perspective, and I think it brings vivid detail and better understanding to something that the growing generation is starting to lose sight of. And so my vote for what should be taught in schools is March by John Lewis, published by Top Shelf. Good luck and thanks.
Our final book is Deadly Class Number 5, written by Rick Remender with art by Wes Craig. Lee Lowridge is the colorist and lettering by Russ Wooten. Deadly Class is published by Image Comics. So it's about kids in school.
Yeah, school for assassins.
Oh, right, assassins.
No big deal. Just like everybody else's school experience, except...
in the 80s.
With more depth. Yeah, it's set in 1987, which is relevant for visuals and pop culture references, but, you know.
Sure. Every story has to take place sometime.
Sure. Sure.
Maybe it's partly a comfortability of writing of that period, too, for Remender.
Yeah, he's talked a lot, and it's addressed in the letters for this issue, especially, like, how much of this is drawing from his personal experience, minus the death part.
We would assume, yes.
He was pretty explicit about he didn't, in fact, go to a school for assassins.
Okay.
No matter.
I will choose to believe that.
Right, it's comforting.
For now. So, yes, tell me why you love this story so much, and other things that you love.
Well, there's the, like, ragtag, clicky bunch of friends who represent all sides, breakfast clubby aspect to it.
It's, well, there's two different, so there, yeah, I guess it's, in a way they're pretty similar anyway, like school cliques, like the way kids gravitate to each other mm-hmm. and identify themselves. Mm-hmm. And it's also sort of like, almost like that, like a kung fu movie in a way too. Like this is, you know, the so-and-so clan and this is the so, you know, so-and-so clan, but essentially it's kind of the same, whether it's high school cliques or, you know, whatever, deadly hands of kung fu.
They're still high school kids. It doesn't matter that they're in a school for assassins. They're still 17.
But they're in assassins' guilds, essentially.
Sure. But I think that the whole point that they identify with these cliques or clans or guilds or whatever, and he doesn't, mm-hmm. right? So that's...
Yeah, he's the outsider.
It's like, that's such a thing that it's like a thing with a capital TH. Mm-hmm. That's the whole... point. So I love that. And I obviously love the, because I grew up in the 80s and I've seen all of those coming of age movies and the more recent ones that pay homage to that. And it's good stuff. But then the layer of what they're in school for is interesting, but also his wrestling with his personal demons is so fucking bare and honest.
That's definitely stuff I was not expecting.
Oh my God, no kidding. There are things that he says and there are moments where he is like musing. And I don't just mean like recently, because he's been like high as a kite for the past two issues or most of the past two issues. Because he's tripping. And so his observations are understandably skewed. But earlier he said... And I wrote this down because I love it so much. And I have it on my desktop. It's hard to express honest emotion and be fearless about sadness. Are you fucking kidding me? That's gorgeous. It's gorgeous. And so we get these like philosophical musings in this very high intensity world with very high stakes, like death, the ultimate. And yet... we still have all of those teenage trappings. And I just think that like the whole thing is so lovingly constructed.
There's, even though it's a fantastical and hyper actualized, you know, setting, there's still the reality of these interpersonal relationships, and they're not robots. If anything, I'd say they're more, these kids are even more emotionally raw than your average person.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. And I mean, especially in the fifth issue and like the way that it ends, where, you know, life is so like meaningless. You know, nothing matters. Humanity is a meaningless spurt of consciousness, and there's nothing helping you. There's nothing watching you. Your life is insignificant and the universe moves on. Are you kidding? That's such a huge concept to wrestle with as an adult. And yet...
But didn't you... I think most high school kids are thinking that kind of stuff all the time. It's the first time in our lives where we feel philosophical and have some of the capacity to verbalize that.
Yeah, but the sophistication in the articulation of that... is, I think that's what I mean. Like, it's so beautiful the way that he kind of discovers it and how he continues to come back to it. And certainly that has to do with the writing. But, mm-hmm. but I think that's also, like, that's his character. Like, his vulnerability is why we relate to him.
It's also why he would be chosen for a school like that. It's the intelligence and the unique circumstances of his upbringing that could mold him to be a world-class assassin.
Yeah, but that's such a disgusting step to take.
But right? That is the premise of the book.
I know. But like...
this isn't a coming-of-age book for kids in high school on a road trip. This is... kids being molded to become the world's best killers.
True. And like Marcus keeps having these moments where like he's not the world's best, like he's kind of shoddy at it in terms of what spurs him to take action. But like we've seen him kill more people than we've seen anybody, like the rest of his friends, kill.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, he's like tapped to do that with Billy's father because Billy can't do it himself. I think that he is a very complex character who comes across as, I'm going to use that word again, he comes across as really authentic, because that's what being a teenager is. And like, if you can't get over it when you're a teenager, that's what being an adult still is. All of that conflict and all of that pool from both sides of reacting rationally and reacting emotionally. And I think it's a really fantastic book, and like a very complex world to throw a character like that into, to see how he survives.
Mm-hmm. Or if he does.
Yeah, no kidding. Is this an ongoing? There's not.
I believe so.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it is so much more emotional than I expected, right? Like, you know, School for Assassins. Okay, cool. But he's like so broken.
Mm-hmm.
So him dealing with his personal demons as opposed to like the external demons is the part of this book that like really resonates with me. The rest mm-hmm. of it is like a kind of gorgeous trappings, and like, holy shit, do I mean gorgeous, because the book is stunning to look at. But the obstacles that he has to overcome internally are, for me, like much more, like I can relate to that much more, obviously, than I can relate to the external, like physical obstacles that he has to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's the strength of the book, too. The rest is just the action and the blood and gore that keeps us coming back.
And there is plenty of that.
That is much like our podcast, right?
There's no blood and gore with our podcast.
I do a lot of post-edit stuff.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that's what the people like.
They like the blood and gore, or they don't like the blood and gore?
Everyone loves blood and gore. It's why the Roman Colosseum was so popular.
Got it.
Give the people what they want. Let them eat cake and see lions kill Christians.
I don't think that let them eat cake is where you're going with that.
My history's a little fuzzy.
A little bit.
But I'm pretty sure that's right.
You should read a comic book. Sometimes comics are good at history.
Maybe I'll go do that now. I think I'm ending the show for this week.
Oh, okay. Anything else that we need to share? Anything else we want to talk about?
Well, next week we'll probably have another show.
Hey, that's cool. We do this
every
week.
Should check back for that. Yeah, right. Mostly.
My summer programming starts on Monday, so I hope that everyone is prepared for me to be talking about theater and not comics.
Boy, I'm glad Twitter has mute options these days.
Yep. I'll make sure to hashtag everything with Andrea's summer, full of theater, comics sucks, sorry Aaron, all those things.
That seems like a lot to put into a hashtag.
Well, I'm not going to make this easy for you.
Okay.
Blood and gore, something something, time in a bottle, etc.
Something something, let them eat cake.
Right. It's a good send-off as any.
Something something, comicstherapy.com for everything.
Right.
Order your books, something something, or read them digitally and subscribe, something something else. Yada, yada, yada.
We'll see you next week.
Goodbye.